Hello, welcome to Pathways, where you're invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is Renee Poindexter, sitting in for Pathways host Paul O'Brien. Today I have a fascinating guest, Dr. Judith Orloff. She's a doctor and a New York Times best-selling author who specializes in treating empaths and sensitive people in her private practice in Los Angeles, California. She has amazing knowledge of intuition, spirituality, and energy medicine. You might know her from previous books called Emotional Freedom, Positive Energy, and Guide to Intuitive Healing. Her latest book, fascinating book, couldn't put it down. It's called The Empath Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. Welcome, Dr. Orloff. We're so excited to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on your show.
Fascinating. Well, this book, Life Strategies for Sensitive People, and I know we have a lot of listeners out there who are sensitive because this show is about personal and cultural transformation. And when you're transforming, you go through lots of trials. I love the fact that you're bringing this term empath to mainstream. Tell us about what that term means and why it's surfacing now because of the work you're doing.
Well, I'm a psychiatrist in Los Angeles, and I'm also an empath. So I combine traditional medicine with my empathic intuitive abilities. And an empath is somebody who is open and sensitive and loving and likes inner work and being introverted mainly, though there are extroverted empaths, and being in nature. But they also tend to be an emotional sponge who takes on the angst of the world into their own bodies. And so they often experience depression, exhaustion, anxiety, and they're often misdiagnosed by mainstream medicine because they don't have a context to define empaths. So what I'm trying to do on this book tour and in my work in life is to bring the word empath into the mainstream, into mainstream medicine, so doctors and the healthcare professionals can know that being an empath is real, that we really can be emotional sponges and take on energy from other people. And that's why I wrote the book, to provide protection techniques and centering techniques so that empaths don't absorb. It's not a healthy thing to absorb, at least the negative stuff. The positive is wonderful, the joy, the hope, the compassion. Then we can really, you know, take in all the beautiful energy in the world. But it's not healthy to take on the negativity and the stress of other people.
Exactly. And you refer to the fact that this is misunderstood in mainstream medicine. You know, there's some misdiagnoses. So for some of our listeners, what might some of those misdiagnoses be?
Oh, so many patients are sent to me as a psychiatrist to be put on antidepressants, anti-anxiety drugs, painkillers, because they're misdiagnosed as major depression, panic disorder, fatigue. Any kind of mystery symptom can be attributed to being an empath. And so empaths are pathologized, but being on medication is not the first line treatment for empaths. It's learning behavioral strategies and spiritual strategies to protect your energy so you're not a sponge for everything you come in contact with, including energy vampires, people who drain your energy.
Oh, yeah. That is, I know about that. Well, let's start from the beginning. How does one determine if they are an empath?
Well, there's a quiz in the beginning of the book that can help you diagnose yourself. And some of the questions include, have I ever been labeled overly sensitive, shy, or introverted? And that's often meant as a put down. Do I frequently get overwhelmed or anxious? Do crowds drain me? And do I need alone time to revive myself? That's a key signature for an empath, is they always want to be alone to revive themselves. They don't go out, you know, to parties to revive themselves. Do noise, smells, or nonstop talkers overwhelm me? As empaths have very strong sense of smell. So when I walk into an elevator, let's say, and smell perfume, it can feel like it's nuking me. You know, where it's so intense, whereas someone else might say, oh, isn't that pretty? So it's just a different sense of smell, really. And do I have chemical sensitivities or a low tolerance for scratchy clothes? As empaths are often sensitive, I was just in a hotel room where they had treated the rugs with something, and it was impossible for me to stay in it because it just felt so toxic, though nobody else smelled it. And so empaths are always told, oh, you're the only one who feels this way, which is really crazy making. But even I want to say to all the empaths out there, even if you're, quote, the only one that feels that way, it's just as meaningful. It's your feeling. So you have to really believe in it. Do I prefer taking my own car places so that I can leave early if I need to? Now, empaths often like to do that so they don't get stuck in social situations and get drained by too much time spent there. I can go maybe 2 hours in a social situation and then I'm done. I mean, I could love the people, but I just feel like it's time to go home. You know, I don't need any more interaction because empaths can go on sensory overload with too much interaction. And so it's important to honor that in yourself. If you start to feel, you know, a little anxious or a little full or a little, this is over, I want to go home. You usually, you know, I encourage people to honor that. Do I become afraid of being suffocated by intimate relationships? As empaths often want to have a soulmate relationship, and yet they want to be alone. That was my big struggle. And, you know, I'm working it out slowly as an empath, but it's a paradox, you know, where I want to be alone and I want to be in an intimate relationship. So it's about balance and striking that balance with a mate.
Absolutely. I can relate to that one too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so crazy. You feel like you want to be alone, but you want to be in love. So how do you reconcile?
Right, exactly.
So that's a main theme of being an empath, and it's very, very common. That's why I'm expressing it. Do I absorb other people's stress, emotions, or symptoms? As empaths often absorb someone else's emotions, you could be standing next to somebody, let's say who's depressed, and you could start feeling depressed too when you weren't before. So yeah. It's that sponge thing that happens where you take on the emotions of other people. And then this is a positive. Do I replenish myself in nature? As empaths love nature and they tend to replenish themselves there. Do I need a long time to recuperate after being with difficult people or energy vampires? Because empaths often feel an emotional hangover where they literally feel the energy of an interaction hanging over their head and their body affecting their energy level, you know, almost like an alcohol hangover, but it's an emotional hangover. It's something very distinct when you feel it. And do I prefer one-to-one interactions and small groups to large gatherings? As empaths typically prefer smaller groups or one-to-ones than going to a large stadium full of people. So those are a few questions from the self-assessment test, Are You an Empath?, in front of the book. And if you've answered yes to even, you know, 3 to 5 questions, you're at least part an empath. If you've answered yes to all the questions, you are a full-blown empath.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, I am a full-blown empath for sure. And, you know, I love the fact that you describe how you, as a child, were an empath, but no one knew how to relate to that. Could you tell that story? Because I want to go into this concept about children and parents and, you know, what parents can do with oversensitive children. You were one of those oversensitive children. Tell us that story.
Yeah, I was a child. I was an only child of 2 physician parents, and I had 25 physicians in my family. So I had a really strong scientific background in my family. And I was this little girl who would feel things very, very strongly. And I'd walk into shopping malls and crowded places, and I'd walk in fine and walk out with some ache or pain I didn't have before. Or depressed or anxious, and I had no idea what was happening. I just knew that I went in fine and walked out feeling terrible. And what I didn't realize was that I was picking up the emotions, the physical symptoms, the energy of the people who are all squished together in shopping malls, because there's so many of them, and empaths can feel that. They can actually feel what's going on in other people. One of the explanations that I write about in the book is the electromagnetic waves from the brain and the heart convey information that empaths are sensitive to. So you could literally pick things up intuitively and through the electromagnetic group that most people don't know about. And my mother, who is a doctor, said, oh dear, why don't you just develop a thicker skin? Mm-hmm. You know, which didn't help me at all because I didn't want to develop a thicker skin. I just wanted someone to understand me. And so it's important that we understand our empath children and our empath parents. And I've devoted a chapter in the book on that too.
Exactly. Well, you know, for parents, you know, the checklist on how do you know if you're an empathetic parent? Are they the ones that feel overwhelmed and exhausted from just the intense demands of their children and they don't know how to recognize and support them, who the children may also have those sensitivities? I mean, what would you recommend for parents that are listening right now?
Right. Well, I think all parents are overwhelmed and all parents are empathetic. But if you're an empath parent, that's if you magnify the normal amount of overwhelm 100 times, that's the empath parent. So empaths who want to be parents, you know, I really counsel them to do a lot of introspection before choosing parenthood, just to make sure that they know what they're getting into here. But if you're an empath parent, then you have to take a lot of me time whenever you can, even for 2 minutes, even to go in and replenish yourself for 2 minutes and to take care of yourself and begin to set limits and boundaries with your children early on. And if you can get some help, you know, that would be very good so that you could get just a little bit of rest and a little bit of sleep. So you have to work with yourself. And if you have an empath child is a very sensitive, special child. That child should not be scheduled back to back with play dates all day long because it's too much for them. Empath children like alone time. They like to imagine. They like to create. If you give a party, they might climb under the stairs and just watch everybody rather than interacting, which I feel is fine. You just let the child stay there. You know, he or she is getting it and is interacting in their own way. And so you really need to encourage your children's sensitivities. And if they say, oh, I'm so tired around this schoolmate, instead of saying, what are you talking about? You can say, tell me about it. Tell me why you're tired. What about this child makes you tired? And it turns out he's a bully or a rageaholic. And you say, that's normal. You're picking it up. Not everyone will understand that, but I do. And I want to support you in that. And unfortunately, sensitive children get bullied, and especially sensitive boys who are considered sissies and weak. You know, they don't want to play video games. They want to go out in nature. They want to read, you know, just a different sensibility. And if that ever happens, I really encourage parents to be a fierce advocate of their children and go into that school, zero tolerance on bullying, stick up for your child and tell the teachers not to call them overly sensitive or that they have a thicker skin. They have a gift. This empathy is a gift that needs to be nurtured and developed, not put down.
Exactly. Powerful. You know, you also mention in your book about empaths and work, you know, because a lot of people, they get stressed at work. And you say that the empaths are creators, inventors, visionaries, artists, and people who feel first. And they usually can see the big picture while navigating the workday. But, you know, sometimes we got people that aren't in the right situations. What do you recommend for, you know, secrets to finding like the best career or the best place to work for a person that's an empath?
Well, empaths oftentimes love being self-employed because they could have a home office. That's ideal as long as they don't isolate. They have to balance, you know, having their home office and going out and being with colleagues and friends. They're not good in high-pressure corporate environments where there's a lot of office politics. They're not typically good in sales or working with the public. I had a patient who worked at Walmart, and she just couldn't stand the loudspeakers, the fluorescent lights, the public constantly talking to her, and the intense stress. So that's not a good job for empaths. So she would get very anxious there. And although being a policeman or a firefighter is a hero's work, it's not really good for empaths because it's too intense, it's too stressful, too much adrenaline running through the body. However, empaths really do well as healthcare professionals because they're natural born givers and they love to help others. They just have to learn not to take on the energy of their clients or patients. And I have a whole section on this for healthcare professionals and those or in a helping capacity. If you have aging parents, if you're in some kind of helping capacity, you're going to need to know this information if you're an empath. So you can be of service, but not take on your loved one's emotions or suffering. And people go through a lot of suffering in this world. And I want the empaths out there to know that you can be compassionate and loving and not take on the suffering. As a psychiatrist, you know, for over 20 years, I've worked with so many people and so much suffering. If I took it into my body, I would not have longevity as a healer. And so you have to learn how to breathe it out, how to meditate, how to set clear limits and boundaries. And most of all, redefine in your own mind what a giver is, because many people are trained that to give, to be compassionate, you have to take on other people's pain. And that is just not so. And if you want to be of service to this world or to a single person in a healing practice, you have to be able to not absorb what's going on. And that's what the Empath Survival Guide is about, is how not to absorb and how to excel in your many, many talents as an empath.
Exactly. Well, what would you say, you know, since you have how many, you have a Facebook group for empaths, and you have, I think you mentioned over 7,000 people that are a part of that Facebook group.
I do. There's 7,000 empaths in my empath support community on Facebook, and they talk all the time, day and night. They're talking, getting support. I've had people go through different cycles. Some of them get pregnant, you know, some of them get ill, some of them get married, you know, they all.
Exactly.
You know, how to be an empath and do all that without burning out.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, yeah, I was wondering, what would you say are the definite advantages of being an empath versus some of the disadvantages? I think we've talked a little bit about we're oversensitive. We take on other people's issues. We can even take on their health challenges if we don't know how to set proper boundaries and all of that. But what are some of the advantages of being an empath?
The advantages are so many. I wouldn't give up being an empath for the world. Being an empath gives you empathy. And empathy, as the Dalai Lama says, it's the opening quote of the book, empathy is the most precious of human qualities. You know, you really have to get that. That's a profound statement. Now, if you look at all the qualities you possess, empathy is the most precious because it allows you to feel for other people and also have empathy for yourself, of course, and be compassionate with yourself. But empaths are intuitive. They're creative. They're lovers. They're givers. They love being in nature. They have special talents that I talk about in the last chapter on intuitive empaths. They're animal empaths, those who have a special communion with animals. They're plant empaths, those that can talk to plants. There's earth empaths who can feel the earth so strongly. It's like part of your body. And there's dream empaths who dream. They use their empathy to dream and get guidance in their dreams. So all of that, plus creativity and plus the capacity to give and receive love and be a good partner, be a good friend, all of that, because the empath has such a big heart that he or she has a lot to give in relationships and all aspects of life.
It's powerful. Well, I can hear some of the people who are listening to this going, oh, that sounds a little airy-fairy, you know. Where's the science behind this? You talk about neuroscience is now revealing that this is real. This is not some, you know, thing that is, you know, what they call alternative thinking. This is more science-based now. Tell us more about that.
It is. There's a section in the book on the science of empathy and empaths, and there's so many interesting research findings about this, where it's thought that empaths or really empathic people have a hyperactive mirror neuron system in the brain. And the mirror neurons are responsible for compassion. It's been shown that if your mate gets hurt, gets a cut or gets hurt, and your hooked up to an MRI scan, your mirror neurons will fire off big time because your compassion is going out for someone that you love. Well, those same mirror neurons are in empaths firing off all the time for everybody who is in pain. And so it's hyperactive. So it's really interesting looking at empaths in view of the mirror neuron system, those incredible neurons that we have in our brains that allow us to feel compassion. And this is in comparison to, let's say, the narcissist or the psychopath or the sociopath that has an empathy deficient disorder and has no empathy in terms of how we understand it, because they have a hypoactive mirror neuron system. So I talk about that, and it's just so interesting. At different ends of the spectrum, you have the empaths who are on overdrive with empathy, and then the narcissists who have no empathy on the other side. And unfortunately, there's sometimes a toxic attraction between the two, which I also discuss.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have had that experience also. I needed this book about 20 years ago, Dr. Orloff.
Yeah.
Well, how do we protect ourselves? Let's say that attraction exists. You know, let's say if you're an empath and maybe some of our listeners have had those run-ins with narcissists or, you know, psychopaths or sociopaths or energy vampires. What do we need to do to protect ourselves when that occurs?
Well, I would go to the chapter on how to combat narcissists and other energy vampires. But dealing with the narcissist is different than dealing with other types, such as the chronic talker, the victim, the blamer. The narcissist is more dangerous because the narcissist lacks empathy, though it doesn't appear they do in the beginning. When you first meet a narcissist, they're charming, they're smart, they're loving, they pay attention to you, they seem to value what's important to you. And so they put on a front until you go against their program. You don't do what they want to do, and suddenly they become cold, withholding, and punishing. And so empaths need to know not to get involved with a narcissist. And I don't care how long you haven't been in a relationship. I don't care how charming he or she is. Don't do it. It's too painful. And I know I tell empaths this all the time, but, you know, a lot of them don't listen to me. And so, you know, people do what they need to do. And so they get into their relationships and they learn that lesson, you know, what it is. And the problem is empaths think they could reform a narcissist with love and compassion. And you really can't, as much as I would like to say you can. It's, you know, I have patients who've taken 20 years, you know, being in a relationship, having children with narcissists, and finally they get out. And if ever you get out, you have to go cold turkey, because otherwise they'll reel you back in with saying exactly the perfect thing.
Well, like I said, I could have used this 20 years ago. But listen, you know, you have, let's say, to help empaths embrace their special gifts, they need to develop some self-preservation techniques, which you say to not only survive but thrive. What are some of those inside survivor tips that you talk about in your book?
Well, it's important to learn how to set fierce boundaries with people, like with energy vampires. If somebody is draining your energy, you have to learn that no is a complete sentence, where you can say no to people. If somebody is a chronic talker, let's say, and they corner you at a party, what you have to do, as hard as it is for an empath, you have to interrupt. And you have to say, you know, I'm so sorry, I have to interrupt you midstream, but I really have to go over here, or, you know, just get out. And that's the only way you're going to be able to learn it. Or if a victim, someone with a victim mentality calls you and keeps you on the phone for 2 hours talking about all their woes, but they're not talking about solutions, you have to end it at the 3-minute phone call, I suggest. You know, just stay on the phone for 3 minutes and just say, you know, I have to get off if you want to keep going around in circles. But if you want to talk about solutions, that's another story. But the victim usually says yes, but. So to learn how to set these boundaries with people who drain your energy wherever you can, you know, it really is so important. Because the empath usually is such a good listener, and so they get cornered places and they get dumped on. And I talk about in the book the difference between venting and dumping. Dumping is when somebody takes you captive and dumps their anger on you, versus venting, where they make a request to discuss an issue with you, which is totally different story. So setting clear boundaries is really important. Learning to take alone time is extremely important for empaths. And meditation time, I have a 3-minute meditation that I suggest to reboot your energy that I use throughout the day, where you focus on something really, really beautiful. You know, it can be the sun, it can be the moon, it can be a flower. You focus on something you love or the sound of the ocean, and you focus also on how much you love that to build up the love in your heart. And replenish yourself in that way. I do that between patients so that I could come back to, you know, my center, which I believe is the love in me. You know, I believe love is the most powerful energy in the universe. So yes, I want to get back to that.
Well, I love the 3-minute heart meditation that you're referring to. And I started to bring that into my daily my way of being. So thank you so much. You give so many examples of how to create a new state through meditation, through the book. You know, there's one more question I want to ask you about the search for a soulmate. And this really also impacted me. It says, are you attracted to unavailable people? Yes, I'm an empath. And yes, I have been attracted to unavailable people. So what is this? How do we get into a relationship that's going to work for us? That's the, you know, a real true partner that works with empaths?
It's a great question, and it's something empaths really need to understand, because they often go for long-distance relationships or unavailable people, because then they don't have to deal with feeling suffocated or the too much togetherness that comes from the traditional relationship that people have, the couples have. That usually won't work for empaths. Empaths have their own special needs, you know, such as alone time, such as some empaths like to sleep in separate beds so they can have that space around them sometimes or all the time. It depends. Empaths need to not have loud noises in the house, you know, with the TV blaring, that will never work. So you talk to your mate about headphones or earbuds. So you have to have these creative conversations, you know, with your mate in order to make it work. But it won't work with an unavailable person, but in a way they're safer, because then all this doesn't come up, because you're always just longing after something that's non-existent. So Okay. Yeah, it's different. So if you want a real relationship, you have to have somebody who's going to honor you, and you deserve to have someone honor your sensitivities.
Fantastic. So much. This book, I'm telling you, it's not just a, you can read it, but then you refer to it. It is actually a true survival guide. You know, Dr. Olaf, I wish we could talk much longer, but I see that we're just about at the end of the time for this show. Can you direct our listeners to a website where they can receive more information about your book tour and your Facebook group and all the ways in which they can integrate these ideas into their life?
Right. Well, I also have a free empath support newsletter that I give out, which is on www.drjudithorloff.com. drjudithorloff.com. And I want to say I'm going to be at the Boulder Bookstore on Tuesday, April 25th, and at the Tattered Cover in Denver on Wednesday, April 26th.
Fantastic. For those of you that have tuned in late, this is Renee Poindexter sitting in for Paul O'Brien, and today we have been visiting with Dr. Judith Orloff. She's the author of many books. This, I think, is her 6th book, and it's called The Empath Survival Guide, and truly, you know, it's life strategies for sensitive people. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to Pathways Interview Program, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways and its podcasts, the interview program dedicated to personal and cultural transformation. Thanks again, Dr. Orloff. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. And thank you for all the listeners. We thank you for tuning in and for being a part of our show.